This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Kerry Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervy, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And I'm here with my beautiful and talented co-host, Kerry Kasem, who I missed last week. We had a great interview with Ben Braffman.
I am really bummed.
And you weren't here.
I know. But I'm getting healthy, so I think that's a good excuse.
Melissa Lefkovich did a great job co-hosting.
I love her. She's fantastic.
She is.
Yeah.
She really is. And she actually was an intern for Ben Braffman in New York as a law student. And it was really cool to hear him say, "How are you doing, Melissa?"
Yeah.
And she's got her own criminal practice now.
And
TV shows. And she's got a new TV show coming out in November, which she won't tell us about.
No.
But when it is released, I'm sure we will talk to her about it. And, of course, you heard all of the inside stuff that Ben Braffman told us about representing Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, all of it.
All of
it. There was so much, I couldn't take it all in.
Yeah, he said, "Harvey Weinstein's off limits. I will answer any question. I'll talk about Michael Jackson. I'll talk about Puff Daddy. I'll talk about anyone, but not Harvey Weinstein." And Genevieve Wong, our producer, was so upset because that's all she wanted to hear about was Harvey Weinstein.
I think most people do. It's the newest thing,
yeah.
Right?
So well, we'll have to get Lisa Bloom back on the show because
she's going to do that.
She'll talk about Harvey.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. We haven't had Lisa on for a while, but she was on a couple weeks ago when you weren't here.
Will always happen.
When Gloria Allred was winning the Women Hall of Fame induction.
Yeah.
September 14th in New York, and we had Lisa call in to congratulate Gloria. And speaking
How did that go?
It was great.
Yeah?
Lisa's voice wasn't great because she was in trial, so she had lost her voice. But it was a mother-daughter love fest, so it was really nice. And speaking of women, we are dedicating October to women in the law, people who have done such amazing work. It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yes.
I was going to wear... Am I wearing pink today? Because players...
You know, the first part of your shirt that says Green Day is pink.
It's pink.
Yeah.
My goal in life was always to play professional football and to wear pink armbands or pink socks or pink tape.
Why? Just because nobody else would?
No, that's what they do in October because it's
breast cancer awareness. But this is a long time ago you would have played. I don't think Breast Cancer Awareness Month hasn't been that long.
I guess not. but anyway, the fact of the matter is we are dedicating our shows to women this month. And later in the show, and maybe she can, just kind of jump in during our first guest. It's Dorna Moyney, who is the CEO of DocuMate, which is a document technology company. It's modernizing the legal practice, and we have to hear how important it is as it assembles documents in a fraction of the time that us lawyers can do it, and of course, the layperson. So we're going to hear about that. It's really fascinating. She is one of the 50 female founders in legal tech, and she's right here in studio. So we're going to talk to her very shortly. But first, another amazing, amazing woman, someone who can do two things. A ballerina, Ricky Liska, is also a lawyer, and she's with the Law Offices of Peter Bullard in Colorado, and she's getting ready for her 19th Nutcracker, a great dancer, ballet dancer, balancing the law and ballet. Carrie, I know that's something that
fascinates you. No, this is with two things that you know, Ricky does that I love. First of all, you're in elder law, probate. You deal with that. I know it's transactional mostly, but the fact that you're a ballerina, I'm obsessed. Absolutely obsessed with ballet.
I thought you were obsessed with her estate planning, probate, and elder law practice.
What I said. Yeah, both. So, I mean, because that's what I do, right? I wish I was a ballet dancer, but I, you know, have a foundation and we have lawyers that do probate and, you know, deal with, you know, it's will and estate plans and everything like that.
All right, Carrie, welcome her to Gervie's
Law.
Well,
welcome, Ricky.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. You know, it's not too late for you to take up ballet.
You know, I've actually been thinking about it. Now I'm dealing with some Lyme disease issues, but it's going away. Thank God. I'm feeling much better because I always wanted to do it. And for the last 10 years, I've been so tired. But now that I'm coming out of it, that's definitely, I was just telling my boyfriend that the other day, I think I'm going to take dance class. Yeah.
Oh, you should definitely do it.
And where was I yesterday?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. In ballet class with
your daughter. I was in ballet class with Harper. And there she is.
In her little outfit.
And look at her great little feet pointed and everything. So, Ricky, I mean, it's every girl's dream. My daughter's 5 years old, and I go to her dance class every Saturday. She's doing wonderfully well. Yeah. But how were you able to accomplish what you have as a ballerina and, of course, went to law school and became a lawyer as well?
I think that I just decide I'm going to do something and then go do it. But I didn't know I was going to be a lawyer. I grew up dancing and I always thought that I wanted to be a dancer. And then I got to college and took some classes in writing arguments and speech communication and just thought, you know what? I really want to get involved in the legal community. And so I went to law school and everyone was shocked. I mean, I was a dance major. I spent all of my time in the ballet studio and doing performances. And then all of a sudden I said, you know, I think I'll go to law school. And everybody went, what? What are you going to do?
I mean, you can't dance forever. Unlike, what's it, Wendy Whalen? Is that her name? Whalen or Whelan? Like of the New York City Ballet. And I watched this movie she did, Restless Creatures. And literally, she could have kept going into her 50s until they put a stop to it. But dancers seem to have a shorter career. And then what do you do? You know, you could either, I guess, teach dance or what do you do after that? So the fact that you have this other career is pretty amazing.
Well, and I didn't dance professionally and probably always wished that I would have tried to do that.
Yeah.
But that's exactly right. I mean, it is a short-lived career, and then you're sort of starting over. And a lot of people teach, but I don't really enjoy teaching dance. I wanted to be able to do writing.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy that thought process. And so, but I love both, you know. So I went to law school and didn't really dance hardly at all. I thought I was going to keep doing that. I went to school in Arizona and took classes at Ballet Arizona. But as you know, you get into that law school process and it was sort of like, am I going to halfway do this or am I really going to invest in this education? And so I quit dancing. And when I came back to Colorado and started working in the legal profession, it was so hard. I mean, you hear people talk about work-life balance all the time, which I actually think is kind of a myth anyway. But generally speaking, you know, when you're a young lawyer and you go to events and you talk to other young lawyers, it's almost like a badge of honor to say that all you do is work.
Yeah. I don't know about that. It may be a badge of honor for some, but
yes,
not for all.
Well, you were. Yes. Ellen was like that. And then he had kids. And it's mm-hmm. like he's now made time for his kids, which is amazing. I mean, even like moving radio schedules around and moving things around to have that time with your kids.
But I had to give up hockey because I played hockey a few times a week.
You gave up a lot, Alan.
Yeah.
You gave up a lot.
The fact of the matter is it is tough when you're juggling because I was into hockey, playing it all the time. And I can only imagine when you've made the commitment like you have, Ricky, especially when you're performing. You know, it's one thing to go at 10 o'clock at night and play hockey, but you're talking about performing the Canyon Concert Ballet Company. Tell us a little bit about that. And I know it's going to be your 19th Nutcracker coming up this year.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So Canyon Concert Ballet is a nonprofit ballet organization in Fort Collins. And they're celebrating their 40th anniversary this year. So it's a unique organization in that they give adults the opportunity to perform at a very high level. And that is pretty rare. There's not a lot of opportunities for people who either were professional dancers or who are invested in dancing on point in large productions. That just doesn't exist in very many places, so it's really unique that they have that. But I grew up dancing with that organization, and so when I came back, 2015 was my first Nutcracker back, and when I came back, I thought I was just going to take class with them, but I love it so much. Wow. I mean, tutus and tiaras. What? It doesn't get better than that.
It really doesn't. That was my first ballet when I was a kid. It was the Nutcracker. My mom took me. And I've been to a few. It's not been a lot, but most of the time I just watch all the documentaries. I'm obsessed.
How can you, and we have to take a break really quickly, Ricky, but how can you balance it? Because when you are preparing for performances, obviously there's a lot of practices. How do you balance your legal practice? You're a 2019 Rising Star Super Lawyer. So obviously you're doing really well in your practice, but it must be tough when you're focusing on preparing for a big performance.
It is. I mean, I have to do a lot of planning because even if there's an off season, so in the summer we don't perform as much, I still have to be taking class. And so I'm always thinking about that schedule. I think about that when I'm trying to decide if I'm going to take a case, you know, how long do I think it's going to last and am I going to be available for that? One lucky thing is that Canyon Concert Ballet does almost all of their rehearsing and the classes that I take after 6 p.m. and the courts are closed by then. So that's really helpful, but it is really difficult. I do a lot of time on Saturdays and Sundays. I don't have kids, and so my schedule is a little bit more flexible in terms of when I can put work time in, but it's a lot of planning. I meal plan every Sunday. I do a lot of crock pot cooking, and you know, there's not a lot of spare time during the week.
You know, I know that when you say you don't have kids, Carrie considers her animals kids, and I know you have a couple of animals.
She does.
You have to always take care of it. And I know Dorna just smiled because she was thinking of her Lola, who's her dog. So, you know, there's a whole balance there. We got to take a quick break. We're talking to Ricky Liska of the Canyon Concert Ballet Company, as well as the losses of Peter Bullard. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Yeah, we've got smiles on all the faces here.
Oh, yeah.
Carrie, that brings back memories.
Oh, my gosh.
And Dorna Moyney, you are also a dancer.
Yes, coincidentally.
Coincidentally. Crazy. We're going to talk to Dorna shortly. She's CEO of Documate, but she's sitting here telling us that you grew up dancing just like Ricky Liska.
I've been everything from the little mouse to the rat to an actual, you know, curly-haired party girl.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I know. 'Cause I'm just starting to go to the recitals now, and I can see what it's like. And, you know, we sit forever listening and watching, you know, 20, 30 different groups. And then finally my daughter gets on for like 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Is that the way it was, Ricky, when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I feel bad for my mom because she was driving me 45 minutes each way to get to Canyon Concert Ballet.
Wow.
And then would watch me for those 20 seconds.
Aww.
Well, eventually it was worth it because the 20 seconds turns into a lot more. And, you know, then when you start getting to be as good as you have gotten, I'm sure she's very proud.
Yeah, well, and I just got, it was absolutely worth it. I got so much out of it. I mean, I really think that ballet prepared me very well for law school.
Yeah. It's a discipline. You know? It's a discipline. I'll tell you, I have a friend who's on Young and the Restless. And she, when she came out to California, she had done ballet her whole life. So she was a ballerina. And one of the reasons she got cast was they said, if you can be, if you're a ballerina with that discipline and you have that kind of, you know,
right.
Yeah. That's why they hired her over the girl, because they knew she'd work so hard.
Dorna, do you think that that has helped you with your law school and now Documate?
I completely agree. I mean, just like you said, Carrie, it gives you this kind of discipline where you're going to school all day and then you dance all the way until nighttime and you're dancing all weekend. You have to kind of do the same thing in law school and in building a company and in being a lawyer.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why I tell people when they say to me their kids aren't that interested, you know, Hudson's playing hockey, he's playing baseball. And a lot of times, and I was sitting watching the dance, my daughter's ballet, and one of the ladies, the mothers, was sitting there saying, oh, her daughter wasn't really that interested. But it's just so important to try to keep their interest so that they can develop and develop these skills and the discipline that you're all talking about. Now, Carrie's nodding her head because she agrees, but there's one other thing that she actually agrees with. All the work you do, Ricky, for elder law and estate planning, we're going to change gears a little bit. Because Carrie is, that is her passion, not only is music and dance and singing your passion, Carrie, but...
So I started a foundation 6 years ago, Kasem Cares. And what we do is we go state to state. We're in D.C. as well. But we put in bills that curb elder abuse in the form mostly of isolation. So when you stop the isolation, you know, you can stop and curb a lot of abuse that comes after that. Because, you know, when you isolate an individual, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, with sexual abuse or child abuse, any kind of abuse starts with the isolation, and same with elder abuse. So I've been doing that now for about 6 years, and we've got 12 states that have our bill in it, and 9 others have adopted similar versions, which allows you to go to a judge and just ask for visitation without going through an entire fight over guardianship, fight over POA, you know? So that's what I'm doing. Have you seen a major guardianship problem in your state?
Yeah, so actually it's interesting because there was just sort of a big conflict and debate on considering the new Uniform Guardianship and Conservatorship and Other Protective Proceedings Act. But interestingly, I mean, here, our system has a lot of protections in it. And so it's fairly rare, at least from what I see, that I see a lot of abuse of that system in particular.
Right.
But one of the things that our statutes don't really address is visitation. And so that visitation component actually was something that the local attorneys talked about a lot. And are still talking about because that would be one way that maybe we could make our system better.
Yeah, what I found with the uniform law is that it actually gives guardians more power. And there's might be some thrown in for the ward or for the families, but very little. And it gave the guardians more power. And that to us, when we, you know, looking at that, was a no-no. It's like, hold on a second. Wait a sec. We see so much abuse already. Why are we allowing more power to people who could abuse? Not saying all guardians are bad, because there's some great ones out there and some of them are necessary. But, you know, a lot of what I fight are, you know, abusive guardians. So we definitely need to do something,
Ricky,
about that.
Tell us a little bit about your focus in your practice.
So I do estate planning, probate, and elder law. So during Nutcracker, I do mostly estate planning, lots of, meeting with families, drafting wills and trusts. I'm always working on probate administrations, and then I also do guardianship and conservatorship, but when those are contested, I have to be a little bit more careful about taking them, because if, for example, it is a case that is going to need a lot of time in the last 2 weeks of November and the first week of December, then I usually shy away from those a little bit.
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm not laughing, because I'm sure your clients need your assistance, but you need to be at your best and you have to be able to balance your time. And I know that Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. And I have to be pretty, I just try to be really careful that I am going to be able to be present in all that I'm doing, because it's important to me that my clients in my legal practice don't suffer because I enjoy dancing. Mm-hmm. And, on the flip side, also, the dance company doesn't really care about my law practice.
Exactly.
Right? And so if I commit to being there, they expect me to be in rehearsal, and telling them, oh, I have a hearing tomorrow, isn't really going to cut it.
It doesn't. And, it's surprising because a lot of lawyers don't understand that. I have a lot of lawyers who work with me in my firm, and sometimes I'll walk by their office and I'll hear them telling a story about themselves to our clients. And I'm thinking, mm-hmm. really, what's the purpose of that? Their client wants to make sure that they have all of your attention as a lawyer. They don't need to hear about your problems. That's not why you went to law school, to tell your clients about the problems that you have, although some of us would like to tell our clients that. But I've always been really focused on trying to help our clients, because that's why you are a lawyer. And I'm right. sure, Ricky, that's what you're doing in your role.
Yeah, for a long time, I didn't even, most of my clients didn't even know that I danced in the evening. But there was a newspaper article that they published, and so now more of them know about it. But I still don't usually volunteer that information.
Well, probably
do
a
they
good
come?
Idea.
Do your clients, are they coming to the Nutcracker?
Sometimes they do. In fact, actually, after that article was published, a couple of them called and they were like, is this you? I can't believe you didn't tell me this. But it was like, well, when was I going to discuss that with you? You know,
it's great marketing. You can just tell them, come one night, watch me perform, and we'll relax. Especially some of the older folks who, really appreciate that, maybe not have as much to do during the day if they're retired. Come and watch you perform. We want to wish you all the luck as you enter the season, the Nutcracker, getting ready, performance, the balancing act, so to speak. And we appreciate, Ricky, you coming on Gervie's Law today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
All right.
All right.
Well, we got to take... All right. Okay, see ya. We have to take a quick break, Carrie.
Yes, we do.
You're looking at me like you're excited to talk to Dorna.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah, this is our month where we really honor women in the law. We have next week, we have Jackie Raffi coming on. And Jackie is a cantorial soloist at the Shomrei Torah Synagogue in West Hills. And she also is a former entertainment lawyer. She went to UCLA Law School, practiced entertainment law, and then decided that she was going to train to be a cantor and a rabbi.
That's
very
really
interesting.
Cool.
Yeah. It'll be, and during the high holidays this week with Yom Kippur coming up, it's going to be very interesting to talk to Jackie. And then after that, we have Molly Bloom from Molly's Game. You saw that movie.
Oh, it's so good. She's so awesome. She's a great speaker. We have the same speaking agent.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's in 2 weeks, Molly Bloom. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Yeah, we got the head bopping going on here.
By request.
He played it.
Yeah. By request. I'd actually like to just listen, but we got to do a show here. This is Dorna Moyney's request. She is the CEO of Documate, a lawyer by trade, and then all of a sudden, she becomes this tech expert and changes the world of legal practice. She has been praised in her company by Above the Law, Mashable, Law 360, The Recorder, The National Jurist, Law.com, a lot of press. She's in Smart Lawyer, in Legal Rebels, everywhere. Dorna, it's amazing. You have come from a young lawyer to this, like, entrepreneur extraordinaire. Welcome to Gervie's Law.
Yeah, thank you guys both so much for having me. I'm very excited to be on the show.
Way too young to be doing all this. I mean, seriously, you look like you're in college still.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's great. Gosh, I'd love to hear that. But no, what an accomplished person you are at such a young age.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, how did you get into tech?
So it all started with, I actually never planned on leaving the law to go become an entrepreneur or even work in tech. I was doing a lot of pro bono work when I was at my law firm. And one of the areas in which I did a lot of pro bono work was domestic violence law. So I was representing domestic violence survivors. And I felt like a lot of the time that I was spending was filling out basic routine court documents. Like all the lawyers here in California probably know the judicial council forms that they use for those types of cases, and then also some template declarations. And I felt like I should have been spending my time on actually giving legal advice or representing the person in court or drafting legal intensive or fact intensive briefs. So I really just wanted to automate this initial piece of the process.
Wait a second, Dorna. Your bosses, the partners, didn't want you spending. They needed to bill. And what a great billable excuse.
Well, so that's exactly it, is that this was pro bono work. So they wanted it to be more efficient and impact heavy.
Oh, for the pro bono, right.
So thankfully,
not the billable stuff.
I didn't start by billing for the billable stuff. But on that point, I actually think that a lot of people think that, you know, automation means you're doing away with the job of the lawyer. But there's this whole group of Americans who don't have access to the legal system because they can't afford it. And so really what I think is that automation gives lawyers access to a much larger proportion of the population in order to even monetize that.
Right. You know, and we've seen that on our show. We've had Laura Wasser on quite a few times. She has It's Over Easy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with that website. That's for divorces. You know, for $700, you get your divorce. We also had Arya Feruzman. Did you know who he is? He's with Biz Counsel. So Biz Counsel gives you a lawyer for $89 a month.
Right, right.
So it's kind of a trend that we're seeing more and more because, like you say, legal services aren't available to everyone. Tell us how Documate addresses that issue as some of these other technical services are doing as well.
Yeah, so we actually started with that domestic violence platform. So we automated the domestic violence platform, launched it within my firm, used it at a bunch of different legal aid organizations and domestic violence shelters throughout California. But what we realized was that the best way to address these types of areas of law and automate them was to build a software platform, not to actually provide the content ourselves. Because otherwise, we would need to have a whole staff of lawyers who were creating content for every single area of law. So we just said, why don't we automate away the engineer's job? So we built out the software platform, and now instead of spending 3 months having an engineer build out a workflow, like we call it TurboTax, like a TurboTax for law, instead of building out your own TurboTax for law for your area of law, you can just get on our platform, use no code, automate, you know, create questions like you would on SurveyMonkey or Typeform if you ever use that, and then connect them to your template documents and then launch them to your customers, use them internally at your firm, and really just, you know, do whatever you want with it.
Okay, wait a second.
Awesome.
I'm a lawyer.
That's awesome.
There are a lot of people who are listening who are not lawyers. And by the way, if you want to call in, it's 800-222-5222, 800-222-KABC. For those people who are not lawyers, let's take them step by step. Give us an example. Let's use something tangible, how Documate would work.
Definitely. Yeah. So, I mean, divorce, estate planning, some of these areas.
One. We're going to hold you to it. Pick one.
Well, I'll pick divorce since you just mentioned it.
Right.
So let's say you're a divorce lawyer. So our clients are all the lawyers, not the end consumer. Our clients can actually interface with their end consumer. Our client would be the lawyer. They come onto our platform. They have an area of law that is routine, template-based, or form-based. So take divorce, for example. It's comprised of a bunch of different judicial council forms, which are PDF forms that are provided by the California courts,
right?
Plus maybe some declarations that are already pretty template-based.
So you have those?
We don't have those. So we don't provide any of the content.
Okay.
The lawyer who comes onto our platform usually has that themselves. Like every single professional, every single lawyer has some templates for their own practice.
Okay.
So they'll come onto our platform with their own content. And then what they do is our platform is essentially a two-tabbed platform. One tab is you're creating the questionnaire. The other is where you're loading all the template documents. With the questionnaire, you ask all the questions like, what's the client's name?
Who asks the questions?
So it's the lawyer who creates those in our system. They'll just type those in. So they can say, I want a text question. What's the client's name? I want a multiple choice question. Are you married, single, or divorced? Or is this a divorce or a domestic partnership? And you create all those questions. You can add all kinds of logic to them. Let's say someone has they have children. You can trigger a bunch of, you know, maybe five more pages of questions because that's related to children and child support.
Would you do it for each case, or would you do it once or twice to develop kind of a template so that it doesn't take the time the next time?
Exactly, the latter. So you would create it one time on our platform, and then after that, you have this workflow. So think of like TurboTax.
Yeah.
Now you have a TurboTax for divorce that you can use internally. Maybe you can have your paralegals or your other associates help you draft these documents. Or some of the more like entrepreneurial lawyers like Laura Wasser, who you mentioned, you can have these workflows published for the world. And so your clients can come on, go through these questionnaires, and either have those questions, those documents be generated and sent back to you as the lawyer, or the client can actually pay for that workflow and take those documents and go to the court on their own on a flat fee and not need to come back for you unless they have additional.
Do you ever submit those documents?
We don't. So when we were doing the domestic violence platform, we did do a little bit of that. Now we've become very hands-off. We think it's best for the lawyer to be part of that entire process. Then if the client needs additional help, they're mastering that system. So we've kind of taken a hands-off approach there.
You know, it's interesting because it really begs the question, and I hinted on it before, how does this change the judicial practice, the practice of law, and the courts, when you have something automated, something that modernizes legal practice? Where do you see that changing the practices as we move forward?
Yeah, so I mean, right now in the U.S., we have a huge access to justice problem. The Legal Services Corporation, which maybe some of the listeners might not know what it is, but it's a congressionally funded nonprofit, a congressionally set up nonprofit that basically does these reports and on the state of access to justice every year. They said in their last report that there are 86% of people in the U.S. Who have a legal issue don't either receive no or inadequate legal services for that issue. Mm-hmm. So we can't just solve that with pro bono lawyers and throwing money at the issue. We need to solve that with automation or in bringing in technology to hold the hands of the lawyers as they're going forward.
You know, I know, Carrie, you know, this crosses over to some of the things that you've done. People who don't have access.
I hear it all the time. I don't have access to a lawyer. I don't have money. I don't know what to do. There are some lawyers who will go in with, especially some of my cases, will go in and help pro bono. And that would help immensely because it does take a lot of time. It really does. And then when you're helping somebody else, you're losing money in certain cases. So, and I know that there are some, you know, requirements, especially for the bigger law firms to do this, but you don't see them necessarily taking on guardianship cases in the field that I work in. So this would help it tremendously. How long has this been out what is the feedback?
Yeah. And another point on what you just said is there are organizations like yours who are doing this amazing work. There are law schools and law firms where they're providing pro bono assistance, but those are usually concentrated in big cities.
Yeah.
And people who are out in Fresno or Bakersfield aren't as close to those types of resources, and they may be more spread out. So you might need to drive 2 hours to get there. And so that's been kind of one of the main responses to answer your question. It's people realizing that they can spread, as a lawyer, I now have access to all of this population that I wouldn't have been able to help before. Whether you're going to do it from a pro bono perspective and help people and, you know, provide free legal assistance, or whether you're going to have something that helps you build like additional revenue in a volume-based practice.
Now, you were a trial attorney at Shepard Mullin and Sidley Austin for several years. Not that many, because you're still very young.
Almost 7 years.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's when some of us have been practicing for 25, 7 years is nothing. How did you develop this interest? Because I know you had a partner, Michael Joseph, who was more of the engineer technical guy, but you must have had a vision. And most people working for large law firms like you did are so inundated with work and are so overcome with what you're doing on a daily basis as a trial attorney, it's really hard to shift gears and get your mind thinking about all of this, you know, burgeoning field of law.
Yeah, and I think that was actually what led me to into this area, was that I wanted to have this pro bono part of my practice, but I also didn't feel like I was able to accomplish that much given the limited amount of time that I had to give to it. So I thought if I could automate this, and I got together with my co-founder and we built out that first platform, then that would free up a lot more time. So it was actually like the time constraint that led me into that area.
Very interesting, because you don't usually think of that. When you talk about the different areas of law, you obviously didn't have exposure to all of them. How did you become an expert for document purposes when we're looking at areas of law that you probably knew very little about?
Yeah, so the great thing about our platform is that I don't necessarily need to know anything about any area of law, because it's the lawyers who have the expertise in their own brains and they're automating it. They're automating their own expertise on our platform. So we have people doing things that you and I know about, like divorce and estate planning and you know, conservatorship or guardianship or corporate legal formation. But we also have people doing all kinds of things that I've never heard of, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, transfer pricing and all of these documents that I never would have come across. But as long as they know what they're doing, then they're able to automate it on the system.
All right. That's about as honest as you can be. And I guess it's really good to know that, because there's so many potential areas that you can get into without having to be an expert in that area. We got to take a quick break. We're talking to Dorna Moyney of Documate, CEO of Documate. We have one more segment. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Yeah, we're back. We're talking to Dorna Moyney, CEO of Documate. Now, Dorna, I read somewhere when I was reading about this that one of the lawyers called it a time-saving tool of your dreams. That's to Documate. When you hear that, when a lawyer's calling it a time-saving tool of your dreams, tell us what that means to you.
Yeah, so I love hearing about customers loving our tool and using it in all kinds of ways. But what I think what that means to me is that that lawyer is now able to take time for themselves to either choose to put that towards their family, you know, like you said, you know, go out and spend time with your kids and have more of a work-life balance, or choose to put that same amount of time towards creating more revenue for more clients. And so it really gives the lawyer a lot more power over their practice.
Do you think it's a good lawyer who says that, who does that, versus one who is just trying to bill? Because some lawyers, and I'm not a big fan of theirs, I don't bill, you know, I'm a plaintiff's attorney, but for those defense attorneys especially insurance company attorneys, they just seem to be looking to bill and bill and bill and do whatever they want. They don't want something to save time, because they're just trying to get, you know, a million billable hours a month.
That's something I hear very often about the lawyer's need to bill, bill, bill. I do think, though, that the legal practice is changing. Like, even in the time that I was practicing at a law firm, from the first year I was there until the last year that I was there, we saw such a change and difference in our clients and how much they expected us to use tools to save time, or how much they were pushing back on bills, or how much they understood about, you know, you're using a template, why am I being charged as much?
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's much more of a push towards flat fee. And as things go
exactly.
to flat fee, then...
Yeah.
But I think also that the clients should be thrilled with it, and they should be pushing their attorneys to use it so that they can save time. Because when they look at their accounting and they look and see the billable on preparing a document where it can be done through Documate in a fraction of the time, they've got to think, why are you billing me for this for 3 hours mm-hmm. when it can be done in 15 minutes?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think at some point it's going to be a marketing tool for a lot of lawyers. Like, hey, we're using technology, whether it's Documate or other types of technology, to enhance your practice. And that means that we're providing you the most efficient legal services.
You know, this is such a great idea. It kind of, you can use it for a lot of things. Are you expanding with it, not just in law and legal?
So that's a really good question. We are focused right now on law and legal because, you know, I know law. I used to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
And it's easier to kind of explain this to lawyers. But we have some clients who have found us in other areas, actually. So, like, we have some people in sales, really lengthy contracts, very custom. You need to automate it. Needs lots of complex logic and calculations, HR.
So you can come in and use.
Definitely.
Even if you're not in, okay, because that's amazing. You can use this, especially when you have contracts that you're constantly going out, or you have these, you know, templates that you want to go out. I do this in one of my other businesses. It just seems like it would be so much easier to have that, especially with like when you, because I do surveys. And the fact that you can make a survey and just send that out in any kind of field would be amazing.
Wasn't there a professor in Canada that was utilizing it? I read somewhere.
Oh, yes. So there was a professor in Canada, and they actually had their whole law school class taking it, and they were learning about Document. For one of their classes, they automated like an NDA or something, and they all learned about it. And actually,
non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yes, exactly. Yes. Non-disclosure agreement. And so a few of them, I think, have now left those classes and are using it within their practices.
That's great.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool.
When you think about it, you know, there's so many different opportunities. And when you think of those opportunities, where are you really focused? When you're doing your marketing, who are you focusing it on?
Yeah, there's three areas of law that we find a lot of people using it for, and we've kind of talked about them a little bit today. One of them is family law, another is estate planning, and then the other is kind of like general corporate document formation. So we know that people in those areas utilize us pretty heavily, and it's very useful for their practice. So we do market towards them, but we're starting to expand that as well.
How does Document make its money? Like, how do you translate all of this technology into a company that you can expand with?
So we are a subscription-based model. So we have per user pricing, and you just pay every month. And we, and in terms of the reason for that we're a subscription-based model is that it's a web-based platform. We take security very seriously. We actually have some medical practices on our platform too. So it's legal and medical. So you have a lot of really confidential data. So we actually set up every single one of our clients with their own server, which means that all of your data is black boxed on a separate AWS server with a dedicated instance. And for that reason, we need to do subscription-based pricing. So you just pay our licensing fee every month, and you have full power to do whatever you want with it.
So they can do as much as they want just with the subscription. And that's kind of how Biz Council works as well. As Arya Farouzmand was telling us, that it's a flat fee per month, and then they get the legal services. And I always wonder, do people abuse that? Does it affect you when someone is basically paying a subscription amount per month, yet they're taking up all of your time and resources?
Yeah, so they are on their server, and they are our clients are usually able to understand the system pretty quickly. They get on, we usually do like a 10-minute demo and kind of ramp them up. But otherwise, then they go on and use their own time to create these workflows. So we're here if they need us, but they don't really take that much of our time after they're all set up. And we just love hearing about people using the platform and serving more of their clients, because that's what makes us happy, is when our customers are happy.
And your husband, Troy, now he's involved in a tech company as well. What's it, InCloud Council?
Yes.
Did you learn from him, or were you at home and you were talking to him and saying, hey, what a great idea. Maybe I can translate that into Document or Help Self, which was the first name for Document.
Yeah. So I think, you know, his business is also legal related, but we have very different businesses. So not necessarily in the content, but it's always inspiring to have another entrepreneur in your house who has gone through, you watch them go through the very beginnings of their company until now, having, you know, he has a company with employees and, you know, they're doing very well. So it's just nice to see that transition, and that's inspiring for someone who's going into that.
What are the services that they provide?
So they do high volume repetitive legal documents. So they have a network of attorneys across the, and he's probably going to tell me that I'm butchering all of this.
That's okay. we're not trying to get you in trouble here.
But they have a network of attorneys across the country, and actually outside of the country now too, who actually perform those legal services. Most of their clients are financial institutions and larger corporations. And then they have those attorneys work on those. And then they also have a software platform, so they can do analytics on the contracts that you have as well.
Wow. It sounds amazing. I mean, the two of you must be at home just looking at your computers, looking at your companies, and in between you have Lola, who's your dog, right?
Yeah, she's a little troublemaker, so she takes up quite a bit of time.
What kind of dog?
She's an English Bull Terrier.
Oh, precious.
She's a rescue, and she. We found out after we got her that she was the old family who had her tried to fight her. So we had to do a little bit of, barking at all the other dogs in our neighborhood, but she's now calmed down quite a bit. I think she feels at home and comfortable now, gone through a little bit of training.
It's amazing, you know, you had that vision of being a human rights lawyer and you're in animal rights by bringing in, and I know Carrie's into animal rights and to, you know, saving dogs
and
cats for you.
This morning got a call. Hey, we have a cat trapped in the wheel well of a Tesla. And so my roommate first went, it was his call. So he went out there. We're all animal rescuers. And so my boyfriend and I got in the car and we're heading out there like, nope, the cat got out. He ran to the other car. Now he's in the other car's engine. So he wasn't trapped. He was just hiding in there. And it was a little baby
warm
kitten. Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. Precious. And when you talk about the cat getting out, the cat has gotten out on Documate. Documate.org. Is that...
It is documate.org. Yes, exactly.
How do you get a .org versus a .com?
Well, so Xerox has the .com, so we had to settle
there
with
you
the
go.
.org.
But you know what? That's great because if anybody looking for it might hit you too.
It's actually, I think it's only negative because I think they click on we have a Google ad for it, so they click on it and they chat on our live chat and they're like, hey, do you have any printers? Like, can you help me fix my scanner?
Oh.
And I'm like, wrong Documate.
No.
You haven't had any lawsuits from Xerox or anything?
I mean, if we take it from, we're not going to debate the IP issues here, but I think that we are in
intellectual
enough.
Property.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
I have to translate everything for you. I'm your interpreter. You're not going to debate the IP issues.
because it's just, we're in such different areas that I don't really think you could make an argument that we are encroaching on their territory at all. But.
Right. There's not a substantial similarity in terms of what you're doing.
Exactly.
But it's really an incredible.
Keywords.
Yeah. Keywords. And I didn't say SS. I said substantial similarity.
Yes, there you go.
Okay. Carrie, I'm about to cough. And we have to end the show.
So you want me to end it? You're going to cough?
Yeah.
Well, just thank you so much, Dorna, for being on the show. And congratulations on your success. It's been amazing. We've had such a fun show. We've had dancers and lawyers on Gervie's Law today.
And animal lovers.
And animal lovers. It doesn't get better than that.
It's called documate.org. And if anyone needs more information, what would you suggest, Dorna?
So they can always email hello@documate.org. We're also on Twitter @documate_law, where we have a live chat on our website. And oftentimes that's me answering it. So if you go to the bottom right, send a message.
Yeah.
And if you want to see Dorna, check her out in some of these articles in Smart Lawyer and Legal Rebels. And we appreciate all the time you've come into the studio and spend with us today, Dorna.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's going to do it. Next week, we have Jackie Raffi, cantorial soloist.
I hope she sings.
She does sing.
No, but here.
She will. Have a great week.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.